Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
But first, our tour of markets. Asia Pacific markets are trading moderately higher this morning after a rally on Wall Street ran out of steam overnight. Seoul is trading up 1.2%. Tokyo is 0.6% higher. But in Sydney, the ASX 200 is flat. Joining me now as we break down all the market action, Willie Kang filling in for Ryan Huang from Dividend Titan. How are you, Willie?
Good morning, Michelle. I'm good.
All right. We begin this morning with two local companies, both of which are fighting to regain the confidence of markets. One company recently announced a major acquisition, but investors are worried about how it will finance the deal. And the second company will soon see a resumption of trading in its shares following a three-year suspension over concerns about its business model in China. So the two companies I have in focus this morning are Sats and Best World. I'm going to start with Best World because news broke last night that Singapore regulators will allow trading in Best World shares to resume following a hiatus of more than 3 years. Now, Best World is best known for its beauty and health products sold directly to consumers. Now, remind us what led to the suspension of its shares back in May 2019, Willie.
Yep. So Best World, what happened was in 2019, there was a short seller which came in called Bonitas Research. So what they claimed is that Best World overstated their revenues and profits in China. And this was based on on-the-ground research which they have conducted when the short seller went to the mainland to conduct some of this research on the operations. And Best World is actually, like what you said, Michelle, it's a company where they do direct marketing of their premium beauty and skincare products in China. But the tricky thing here is that this kind of direct marketing business, they tend to have not very transparent accounting numbers, so that could actually attract short sellers like Bonitas Research to come in and sort of say that it overstated their profits and China and profits in China. So Best World back then, they said that, you know, they claimed that they conducted all areas of its business ethically and in compliance with the laws and accounting standards. This was in response to the Business Times. And they said that it was also challenging, you know, to figure where in China the company is selling its secret line of premium skincare products. So back then, the regulators, SGX, came in, they saw the short seller report, they have a look at the business model for Best World, and then they decided to suspend the operations.
So why do you think it's taken so long to clear this up?
I think for a couple of reasons, Michelle. I think one of them, it's number one, Best World is a company where it operates mainly in China. And if you see, for the past couple of years back, you know, you have the S-chip craze where a lot of Chinese companies are listed in Singapore, and that resulted in investors getting burned. So Best World, even though they do not claim themselves to be S-chips, but the operations is such that it's a company listed, incorporated in Singapore, but they have operations in China. So that could actually leave that sour taste in investors. And that also could put the Singapore Exchange on the ball, on its footing, to make sure that everything is cleared up. That's why it took quite a while for the Singapore Exchange to finally say, okay, you can resume trading today after 3 years.
I guess the next question is, how do you think investors will react once Best World does resume trade, assuming that it can clear these last hurdles that SGX RegCo has announced?
Yep. So there are actually four basic requirements that Best World has to fulfill. And one of them is, I feel, is the critical one, which is trying to tell investors and regulators that the legality or the legal issues of their business model in China is sound. So mainly direct marketing of their skincare and premium products in China is sound. I mean, based on the numbers which they shared, the numbers which they report. Now, the thing here is, I think a lot of people are sort of, like what I've mentioned, they are still sort of burnt by this kind of so-called quote-unquote house of cards story, because there are a lot of times where companies report, you know, huge sales and profits, but they have no cash flow. And that resulted in the company filing for bankruptcy or reorganization. I mean, Enron was one of the prime examples. But in Singapore, back home here, you know, you have Noble Group, for example, where they overstated their coal contracts. And in a very lousy coal market a couple of years back, another short seller came on and revealed some of the issues with their transparency and accounting scandal. So that led to Noble going reorganize themselves. Best world, investors could mirror this kind of stories to this kind of past cases, for example, like Noble or Enron, but it's really hard to say. And in this case, you know, going forward, markets or investors could still have that lingering thought or the lingering story behind them for Best World.
Before concerns about the legality of its business in China were raised, Best World shares traded at a high of around $2.87 per share, but they've lost more than half their value. And this by the time the suspension was announced in May 2019. All right, our next company in focus this morning is Singapore Airport Terminal Services, or SATS. Over the past week, Willie, we've talked about how SATS has plans to become the world's largest air cargo handler by purchasing a Paris-based company called WFS, or Worldwide Flight Services. Now, since that deal was announced, SATS shares have plunged nearly 25% amid a variety of concerns over whether SATS has bitten off more than it can profitably chew, shall we say. So, SATS leadership team is seeking to stem the sell-off. What are they looking at?
Yeah, so the key here, I mean, if you see, which came out, the CEO of SATS aims to reduce the size of the rights issue. I mean, this came off a couple of days back where they are announcing a major cash raising from the market, from the equities market, to actually buy out one of the largest global solutions logistics business, Worldwide Flight Services. And the thing is, Michelle, I think that sort of scared off the market because of this huge cash call. This huge potential cash call could actually leave investors putting in more money than they have to raise this acquisition. I mean, SATS is a company where they don't really have a lot of debt. You know, they generate a lot of free cash flow. They have been growing revenues and profits. Yet at the same time, right now, long-term shareholders could face, you know, the returns which they get. Now they have to actually put back the money for SATS to grow potentially. So that's what SATS is doing.
So what do you make of SATS' latest plans? Do you think they're going to be enough to ease the market jitters?
Yeah, I mean, the question is, what is SATS really doing here? For one thing, you know, they did mention that they want to raise money. But on the other hand, right now, the CEO said that this rights issue potentially might be changed or transformed into something else, like a combination of rights, bank financing, and calling in other strategic investors to help to sort of ease off the fears from these investors. And you know, based on this, it could ease market jitters for a moment. But the key here is that if you look closely at SATS, the acquisition is about a third of its market cap. And to finance its business based on external funding, like doing a rights issue or raising debt, that could actually put investors on its toes, because SATS does have cash, but on top of the cash which they have, they still need to borrow money. And you know, historically speaking, acquisitions or acquirers don't tend to fare too well. I mean, if you think historically, companies like Del Monte, where they actually made the huge acquisitions in the US a couple of years back, that actually didn't really bode well for the company in terms of the shares. And they didn't really manage to reduce the debt, because acquirers, when they buy these businesses, if they tend to pile on the debt itself, sometimes it might take quite a couple of years before they pay down the debt. And this is on the condition that the business doesn't change and if it continues to expand the business. And SATS historically has been a very strong dividend player. They have been paying dividends. During COVID, they have suspended dividends. But of course, you know, after air travel opened up, you know, you have the reopening, there are many people which are speculating or expecting the dividends to resume. But in this case, after the acquisition, the payment of dividends could potentially delay.
All right, next, it's time for the Elon Musk files. The world's richest man never gets tired of making news. And today, the big story is about his off again, on again, let's go to court acquisition of Twitter. So Musk has been suing Twitter to try to get out of his $44 billion US dollar acquisition of the social media platform. But the latest, get this, is that with less than 2 weeks to go before the trial is set to begin, Musk says he's ready to buy Twitter after all. And he will do so at the same price that he agreed upon back in April, $54.20 per share. Several questions pop into my mind. First, can we trust Musk on this latest U-turn? Is the deal really back again? And if it is, what do you think changed Musk's mind?
I don't know. It feels like he's doing the hokey pokey, right? Left foot forward, right foot backward.
We're back in the same place we started.
I have no idea. But I mean, things have moved pretty quickly. You know, you have... After he announced that he's reversing the deal, you know, Twitter got the letter from Musk's lawyers and, you know, now he's moving forward with the deal. And it seems like Twitter is also wary about pausing the litigation because it's also considering some options in negotiation with Musk. The thing is, all this sort of leads to, you know, a couple of days back when we discussed, Michelle, where you have Musk having some of his text messages being revealed from some of his friends like Jack Dorsey, some of his VCs as well, his friends offering some advice. So it could be sort of a push for Musk to actually buy this deal because of the advice from his friends. The thing is, you know, what we do not know is, on top of this, why did Musk really change his mind? Is it really because of the friends which he got influenced with? Because we all know that Musk is someone who is a visionary, very ambitious guy, and he thinks independently. And to allow, you know, other people around him to sort of influence the deal this way, it struck me as odd. So this is something that which we don't really know. And another thing is, you know, after acquiring Twitter, is there going to be some synergy with Tesla, his main company? How is he going to divide the time between these two businesses? Tesla is already a business where it has multiple business segments itself. So bringing Twitter, what is he going to really be doing about it?
Yeah, I follow his Twitter page, of course, and he says acquiring Twitter is going to lead to an acceleration of 3 to 5 years of the development of X. That's all we know. For now, the trial between Musk and Twitter is still set to proceed. The judge presiding over the case notes that neither party has filed for a motion for the legal proceedings to stop. After the news broke, Twitter shares skyrocketed 22%. They fell back a bit overnight. They made shy of $50 per share. Now, Willie, anyone who bet that this deal would finally go through after all the back and forth of the past few months stands to make a lot of money. In fact, I see a Florida-based hedge fund is set to make $200 million from its Twitter purchases. Tell us more.
Oh, yeah. So, Penwater Capital, which is the Florida-based hedge fund, became one of Twitter's biggest shareholders in the second quarter. So, according to the fund manager, they said that, you know, based on the deal which Musk wanted to make before this whole fiasco and this whole trial came about, they expected that the deal would actually go through. So, they actually bought shares in Twitter. And it was a good bet, I would say. I mean, on hindsight, you see how the shares have rallied. But of course, it's not just Penwater. There were also a lot of other hedge funds which also came on board, like Greenlight Capital, which is run by David Einhorn. So he is a famous hedge fund manager. He's well known for actually calling the shots on the global financial crisis. And him actually putting a bet on Twitter actually struck me as something which is very surprising because, on one hand, you know, David Einhorn of Greenlight Capital isn't the kind of guy who would actually bet on social media companies. You know, he's more of someone who looks into numbers, digging deep into the accounting numbers of different companies, more so than trying to figure out where social media companies are going or trying to visualize where technology is going. So, you know, to this extent, this arbitrage has a lot of different players in this game.
Longtime shareholder Saudi Prince Alawil bin Talal also owns some $2.17 billion worth of shares at acquisition price. Jack Dorsey, Twitter's co-founder, owns some $18.04 million that's valued at close to $1 billion. And among institutions, the only investors with a bigger stake than Pentwater are Vanguard, BlackRock, SSGA and Fidelity. So those are the investors set for that big payday should this deal close. I'm sure they're following the proceedings with bated breath. Now, one more item about Elon Musk. He says that if he buys Twitter, he'd like to make it part of a bigger, more useful platform. I mentioned the tease, something he calls X, the everything app.
Wow.
Musk hasn't provided any details about this yet, but for those of us here in Asia, what Musk is touting may sound familiar. So what comes to mind when you think of the everyday app?
Yeah, I mean, it's the highly popular WeChat in China. So, I mean, that's what Musk potentially could actually move Twitter's platform into, that kind of huge social media platform. Because, I mean, Twitter right now, in terms of monetization, isn't exactly a highly profitable company. And if you see, on the other hand, what the Chinese are doing with their social media platform, you know, it's huge, because WeChat is a platform where it allows 1.4 billion people to skip an entire generation of emails, right? People are right now buying, transacting, chatting on this highly popular social media platform. So this is something where Elon Musk, you know, potentially could see some potential for Twitter going forward, because at the end of the day, it's not just about the app itself, but the platform, whether the platform is able to generate the traffic, generate the eyeballs, and then, you know, monetize it through advertising.
Time now for more headlines and a quick game of up or down. Are you ready, Willie?
Yeah, let's go, Michelle.
Okay, price of oil, up or down?
Oh, this is up for me. I mean, you can see how the OPEC recently cut their production by 2 million barrels a day. Mm. So this could actually stabilize oil prices in this case. This is an up for me. The latest price for the WTI was about slightly lower than 90. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Brent crude trading around $94 per barrel. So it's up for the price of oil, which means my smile heads downwards when I'm at the petrol kiosk because costs are headed higher again now that OPEC Plus has agreed to slash production. Retail sales in Singapore.
Yeah, this is an up for me. You can see how the numbers have actually fed. It seems like it's pretty strong. I mean, it seems like people are coming out to start spending from their homes. Retail sales went up 13% in August from a year ago. And you can see other, you know, excluding motor vehicles, retail sales went up 16%. Sales at departmental stores went up another 42%. So when people say that, you know, the funny thing is that when I go on the streets or my friends say, oh, hey, I have no money, I'm broke, you know, nothing to buy. But the funny thing is that the data shows otherwise.
I know, people are just spending.
Secretly spending.
We're the only ones not spending.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is retail sales in Singapore, up for me.
Up for me as well. In fact, the retail sales jump of 13% in August extends July's growth. So, you know, that's the direction we're moving. Sembcorp Marine.
So Sembcorp Marine recently landed its FPSO order with Petrobras.
Yep.
So that's a huge $1 billion deal. And this really came in the light of oil prices, you know, coming off. And you have Keppel Corp and Sembcorp Marine merger. So I think they are really a very aggressive in trying to get contracts, really to build back the oil and gas business again. So this comes as an up for me.
Yeah, for me as well. Sembmarine shares jumped 4.5% yesterday on the news that Sembcorp Marine has clinched a $3 billion deal with Petrobras. Singtel is next.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very embarrassing thing for Singtel. For one, Singtel owns Optus, and Optus is an Australian unit, so it's not even a Singapore business segment. So when you have a foreign company, imagine this, right? If you have a foreign company here telling us that, you know, hey, I suddenly have a cyber breach and all of your data are being lost. And imagine that's a foreign company telling you this in Singapore. So I find that this is a down for me, because Optus is an Australian unit and Singtel has actually been running Optus for a very long while. And to actually have this massive breach which affected 10 million accounts, I think this is not a small amount.
Yeah, and Singtel's share price is suffering following that cyber attack on its Australian business, Optus. They fell to a three-month low yesterday of $2.55 per share. Let's check in on how stocks are doing this morning, 25 minutes into the local trading day. The Straits Times Index finished up nearly 0.5% yesterday at 31.53 on the back of gains by Sembcorp Marine and the three local banks. So what is it looking like this morning, and how are the blue chips doing, Willie?
Yep, so a lot of the blue chips are also driving up gains as well. So like what you said, the banks are up. SATS post their acquisition announcement was up 3.7%. Sembcorp Industries was up 1.97%. Singtel, after the announcement of their cyber breach, was up 0.39%.
Just one more story before you go, Willie. Not sure if you saw this, but India's mission to Mars has run out of fuel. Mangalyaan was launched back in 2013, and it was only expected to orbit the red planet of Mars for about 6 months, but it made it to 8 years, and it did so on a shoestring budget, just $74 million. So how do you think India's real-life Martian costs compared to those of Hollywood's exploration of our nearest planetary neighbor?
You know, the first thing when I read this, Michelle, the first thing when I think is always pay for value, always pay for quality. I mean, the orbiter was just 11% of the price tag of NASA's probe, which they have spent huge amount of money. I think it's about $108 million.
Yeah.
And the orbiter, which, you know, didn't last, the Indian orbiter was only on a shoestring budget, which cost them about $74 million.
Well, I think it shows that you can have a frugal budget and still make it in terms of prowess and the journey into the, you know, a wider space. You know, what you can do with the little that you have. I mean, it was meant to last 6 months. Mm. And it lasted 8 years on that shoestring budget. So, hey, good for India. Thanks very much, Willie King. He is the Dividend Titan, or DT, as we say.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.